hello and welcome to The Cast of Us, a podcast dedicated to The Last of Us on HBO and brought to you by the lovely Fan Critical Podcast Network. Today, for the deep dive, we have the whole faction of survivors. Welcome again to our little Gaz, who has proven his weakness in the group by getting sick again.
Yeah, this is like survivor, the 10th though, time
survivor
in 12 months.
Barely.
Honestly, mate, I'm just going to sit in the corner and not speak because I've definitely got some sort of mushroom disease.
Yeah, we joked about it in the preview podcast that you get sick all the time. And this is just, you know, for new listeners, you know, something's always wrong with this kid. And now he's patient zero again. And just stay away, all right? I was with you the other night and now I'm very concerned.
Yeah, so you gave it to me, probably, well-being. In a way.
Mm. He seems all right.
Yes, maybe I am immune. Also joining us this week is our unspoiled survivor, a man with a temper as vicious as Joel's. It's John.
Yeah, cheers, mate. I'd like to say that I don't have a temper, but that would be in complete contrast to the conversation we literally just had before this started. So it's all good. It's all good.
Makes it sound like we were arguing, but we really weren't.
Just definitely not.
We're all friends. Don't you worry. No. Okay. So
never argue.
Anyway. Now, of course, listeners, we'll be with you every single week, giving you our overall thoughts, rating the episode, then heading to our very own patented clicker corner, for all the video game Easter eggs. And, of course, there are spoilers from this point onwards. And this is going to be interesting because I'd love to hear what John thinks about the episode. So let's do it then, shall we, lads? We've had a day or so to digest the episode. Yummy episode.
Good choice of word.
Me and Gaz have already given our hot takes in the Hot Take podcast, which comes out straight after the episode airs. And we gave it glowing reviews at that point. John, you're an interesting one because you have a knowledge. Thanks, yeah. You have a knowledge of the source material, but you didn't really play the game. So you're coming at this show, at least for our group, as, you know, unspoiled, uninfected.
Unsullied.
Unsullied.
He's like the non-book reader of this.
Yeah, exactly right, which is a very fascinating angle. So I'm interested to hear what you want to say, John. Of course, we will be using the blueberry system, which is 0 to 5 blueberries. There can be no halves.
No halves.
5 being the best, 0 being the worst. John, take it away. Your thoughts on the season premiere of The Last of Us.
Bloody good, wasn't it? It was very good. I need to caveat this a little bit.
Boo.
When I watched this last night, so Michelle, who's my wife, so loads of single women just turning off now, but and some men as well.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
How is Michelle? Has she left you yet?
Well, she will do after this show. She has an irrational fear of zombies. Like,
that's not irrational. That's perfectly...
It's not irrational.
No, it is irrational. Sensible. No, because it's fiction, isn't it? Yeah? It's like going, I'm not going out because it's a full moon tonight because there might be werewolves. It's like, they don't exist in England. Obviously, they exist in other countries. I spent about an hour last night trying to convince her that she has to watch this show because it's going to be the next big show. And she was like, well, The Walking Dead was a big show, and I never watched that. And I was like, yeah, but, you know, it's not HBO, is it?
That's right.
And also, she watched Game of Thrones, and they've got White Walkers. They're basically zombies.
Yep.
She wasn't having it. So last night was a bit awkward because, you know, from once Ella, my daughter, once she's asleep, you've got probably about 3 hours of social time as a couple, and I spent 50% of that watching something she didn't want to watch. So stuck it on, got my got my Sony noise cancelling headphones synced up to the TV, and immediately I was like, oh my God, this is good, because it really builds the tension.
Oh yeah.
And so I did say to caveat this at the beginning, zombie-esque, because I know they're not quite zombies, they are. So 28 days later, they're it's not. Like, no, they're not. It's rage, isn't it? Yeah.
Infected humans, yeah.
I'm telling you now, if a human's dead and then they're reanimated and they're eating someone's face off, that's a zombie, man. I'm telling you.
Technically, they're not dead, these humans. Well, maybe they, some are. Anyway, continue.
So anyway, it's my favourite subgenre, I would say. So even when I watch really terrible zombie films, and you know, me and Gaz covered, what was it, like Day of the Dead Bloodline or something? Something garbage.
Awful.
You watched that with me, Len. That was fun.
Yeah, you did, yeah.
I did.
And even that piece of shit was quite enjoyable. So I knew I was going to love this anyway. And then you throw in Pedro Pascal, who's brilliant in everything. Len, I know you didn't like Narcos, but he's brilliant in that. Yeah. He's brilliant in Game of Thrones. He's brilliant as the Mandalorian. So you know he's going to be good.
Brilliant as Joel.
And now he's brilliant as Joel.
A Mandalorian.
Yeah. Mandalorian, yeah. So he plays a woman in that. But it was, as expected, well-paced, brilliant music, full of tension. You're already sold on the characters. There's some immediate heartbreak. The world building already, you know, is going to be amazing. The budget has obviously gone to create something that looks phenomenal. I know Gaz will talk about this, and so I'll let him go on about the liminal spaces element of it. Just a superb first episode. Well up there with first episode of Game of Thrones, first episode of Watchmen. You know, you watch it and it's like, oh, can I watch episode two now? Yeah, I'll turn into a zombie and attack people in the street for episode two. I need it. It's a five bloob, obviously it is. Perfect choice to start and end the plot where they did. Big shout out to the actress that plays his daughter. You know, she's in it for 30 minutes. I hope she gets other things as well, because she did a lot with her.
She was fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, she did a lot with a very short time. I'm very much looking forward to the rest of this season. I'm going to find it quite hard to pick out any real negatives, actually. So I'd be interested to see, because I think we should. I think, you know, we are fan critical.
Yeah, we are.
So we do tend to give some things a kicking at points, but we'll do that in a bit. But I digress. I'll end there by saying five bloobs, excellent. I expect the rest of the season also to be fantastic. And actually, I'll leave you with this. I know there was some criticism over how harsh I was on House of the Dragon. Now you see, this is what well-crafted storytelling is. You watch an episode like this, you don't even have to think about giving it a five bloob. Whereas if House of the Dragon, it was like, oh, go away, too much. So I'll even let them off with the timestamps. You know, it made sense.
That was in my notes.
So there you go, five bloobs from me.
Well, lovely treat for you there, listeners, and anyone new to the show. John is, if he gives something a five, you know it's really up there, okay? Because he's the negative one, all right? Now we're going to throw it to the small, malnourished, dying man in the corner, the one that I've been keeping alive for decades now, somehow finding enough rations to keep him going. It's Gareth. What are your thoughts, mate, before you kick it?
Before I perish. Well, cheers for that intro. I'm going to surprise you all. I've had time to think, and it's not that good, is it?
Hopefully he does perish, to be honest.
Yeah. No, I think John made a point, like, it's going to be hard to find negatives in this, and that's a potential problem. I'm like, maybe we should look at something else. Let's start watching something else.
Go back to Westworld.
Yeah.
Fuck me, that last season of Westworld, abysmal.
I think it's interesting because of the runtime of, like, what was it, an hour 20, a good, like, over a third of it really is told from the perspective of a character that isn't in it from that point onwards. And that's kind of that's a very brave choice. And there have been movies and shows that have done similar things where they kind of misdirect you into thinking somebody's going to be a main character and then, oh no, they're dead, moving on. Game of Thrones even, actually. But obviously it's different for us who have got knowledge of the game, but I think one of the big things in terms of the marketing of this show is that they're not just targeting people who have played the game. They're looking to cast the net wider. So I would be really interested to see how people found the death of Sarah. Her death is the driving force behind everything that Joel does. And so we can look at that and the choice to extend that scene and go, well, this is fantastic because they're building upon what already exists. They're building upon that character development. And really, that is about, it's about Joel rather than Sarah.
Sorry, Gaz. So we're obviously doing this podcast with, you know, live. We can see each other. And yep. Len is frequently going for the most camp way to fan himself. It's so off-putting, honestly. It's like trying to fight back tears.
It's 39 degrees outside or something ridiculous. I am in this office, which has no aircon because I'm recording, so I don't want any, you know, I'm doing it for you, dear listeners. I want this to be sound as good as possible. It's a hot box in here, okay? I'm doing my best. Yeah. Continue, Gareth. Give it a bloody score.
I'm unbuttoning this shirt.
Too much.
I love it. I can't wait to see beyond the walls of Boston. And it looks like we're launching straight in, which is so exciting. And it is obviously, of course, Five Blueberries. It's, what a cracking start.
Lovely. Well, I'm not going to keep everyone waiting for my score. It's a five. And if anything, I'm usually the hype man of the group. And as I said in the hot take episode, they exceeded my expectations with this adaptation.
They did.
I am the member of the group who has played the game six times from start to finish.
Too many.
And I'm doing a playthrough with the show as well, which you'll be interested to know. It's going to be quite fun.
What does that mean?
And
so you stop where the show stops.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
That's right, John. You are a clever, clever man. I've always said that about you.
You're going to be fucked when they change it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Getting the helicopter.
Yeah, do you know what's funny? When I did my last playthrough, there wasn't a bit in the 60s. So I don't know what I did for that bit. But
just acted it out.
No, you know, I consider myself an expert on the game, a mega fan. So if anything, there would be things you'd think with video game adaptations that would really annoy me. Because video game adaptations, as we said in the preview podcast, are usually terrible. Or never live up to the community's desires. And this, you know, is just almost perfection from a series premiere. The runtime felt perfect, even though it's an hour 20. It went along so well. The tension, the peaks, the troughs, just in this first episode. And like you said, John, you're immediately attached to the characters. And we'll touch on it later, but the ability of Neil and Craig, first name terms, obviously, to essentially trust the audience and not go, with heavy expositional dialogue and things. There's so much information that's just, like the game, environmentally told to you. And I think that is really important. And it makes it seem so much more cultured and nuanced than some of the trash that we get on TV these days. So for me, it's a 5. And yeah, like, ecstatic to be covering the show, ecstatic to be talking about it every week. And long may the 5 blueberries continue. Now, we're going to have a short musical interlude and some adverts. And then when we get back, we'll jump straight into the plot scene by scene before moving on to Clicker Corner and all those delicious video game Easter eggs. See you on the other side.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, boys, let's jump straight into the plot. And we open in 1968 with a talk show of sorts discussing a global pandemic. How timely. One contributor describes the real danger being fungi and how certain strains can take over the minds of billions and end humanity.
Bit arrogant, though, isn't he?
He is very arrogant. Did crack me up. How we talked about this in the hot take, but how fucking stupid this chat show is. Like the host of the chat show, clicking his pen and just like having a bit of banter. Mm. Where do you get your LSD?
I liked it. Yeah. It's good. Yeah.
Very, very Watchmen, wasn't it?
It was very Watchmen, John. Mm. Yeah. And that, you know, Watchmen, great show on HBO, also great graphic novel, but we covered Watchmen, HBO's iteration, and it did feel at home with that sort of content. Mm. I thought it's interesting here that, of course, he mentions, as one of the fungi, he mentions the cordyceps strain, and that is the one that actually prevails and takes over the world. And it's a real-world fungus, and in fact, the show says events like that could be possible, which is quite a terrifying thought in a way, because fungal, did a bit of reading about it, obviously, fungal infections are brilliant. There's just no precedent for them, so if they did happen, we'd be fucked basically. Mm.
The irony though, mm-hmm. that something called fungi would make you the opposite.
So sad.
The opposite. Yeah, yeah. That's true.
Angry guy. Mm.
That is true. angry guy. And then of course we fast forward to 2003. We're with the Millers, Sarah, her father Joel, and his brother Tommy. It's coincidentally Joel's birthday, and Sarah decides to take his broken watch to get it fixed for him, which is a lovely gesture. I've written here in my notes, shame that she didn't pay for it herself, really.
Well, buy a new one. Yeah.
Well, Gareth, with his money.
Yeah.
She had to take more than $60.
In a way. Well, you can get some little, like, Mickey Mouse ones for...
True.
For 20 plus
Casios.
Change.
They were back in fashion a little while ago, weren't they? Those little Casio
watches.
They
are now, yeah.
In 2003, probably was in fashion.
Timeless.
It's not a very good watch then, is it?
I do like the fact that they're giving Sarah more time in this version of the story. And it makes the payoff all the more tragic. And the fact that we've just had that little opening talking about pandemic means that essentially it's tense as soon as the scene opens up with Sarah waking up, that there's constant tension building throughout these scenes, which I thought was really good. So Joel says he's going to work late, and when he gets back from work, Sarah gives him the present, and then they settle into a bit of Curtis and the Viper 2, which I've put here in my notes. Looks like a cracking option for the worst of Netflix.
Curtis and the Viper 2, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Is there a Curtis and the Viper 1, or is it just...
Well, Gareth...
Went straight to 2.
There'll be more on Curtis and the Viper later in Clicker Corner, so stick around for
that. That's good.
Ooh. Sarah falls asleep, bless her, and Joel has to go bail Tommy out of jail because he's gotten himself into trouble with the law. And then when Sarah wakes up, all hell begins to break loose, especially when Sarah bumps into Nana. Now, boys, how terrifying is Nana?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, before the virus.
Agreed.
Did the
she's scary.
The old man on the floor with his, you know, his throat bitten or whatever. Was he trying to...
Yeah.
Did he try to say something? I couldn't quite make it out.
Help me.
He said, help me.
Oh, is that what you said? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Why don't you just say run? You're dead, mate.
Yeah, I know.
Selfish. Come on,
selfish.
Well,
yeah.
It's the fungus talking, John. It's the fungus talking. Help me, help me. Let me suck your face off.
Yeah. Yeah, terrifying.
I have to say, they are terrifying. I have to say, Nana was a step up from the version of events in the game. Mm. They definitely, you know, really dialed it up here to make it a little bit more creepy. Also to note that these little fungus tendrils that are coming out of her mouth, I thought were pretty cool.
Disgusting.
They're not really something that happens in the game. The infection's airborne or spread through spores, and they've got rid of that in the show. So they're going for this more tendrily, you know, you see them later on just sort of like sucking on their individuals, which sounds dodgy or whatever, but like, don't worry about it.
Can they do that on HBO? Can they?
They can do whatever they want HBO, John.
Yeah.
You know that. Yeah.
So is that right? They're not going to do spores at all?
No spores.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
Maybe we think it's because of the gas masks, and there would be a lot of like people going, oh, there's no way he didn't breathe in some spores there. And then, do you know what I mean? And it's just easier to avoid those.
Well, I was looking forward to saying that in like episode 4 or 5, but
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah. They saw you coming, mate. Mm. They saw you coming and thought, oh, fuck this. John's going to kick off. So
do little creepy out the mouth instead. Ugh, horrible, isn't it?
I said, John, in the hot take, I said, have you seen Blade 2? It's like Blade 2 when the vampires do that weird thing they do. I don't know. Terrible.
Yes.
I thought it was interesting here, and I was listening to the official Last of Us podcast. Don't listen to them.
What are you doing? Don't give them listens.
No, don't give them. They've got enough money. Yeah? Don't give them money.
We've got no money.
I'll tell you how you can give us.
Yeah.
We've got no money. I'll tell you later how you can give us money. Don't you worry, listeners. But they were talking about how, and I thought it was interesting, how the virus has the capacity to heal, like, you know, fix all of her ailments, like her lack of mobility, the neuromuscular diseases that she has. But also, it's like a curse in a way. And I was thinking to myself, only downside is you become a fungi monster. So, Gaz, this could be your solution, mate. Yeah. This could be the thing that fixes you permanently. No more injuries, no more illnesses.
Mm.
We just give you the cordyceps virus and then we lock you up somewhere. Mm. But at least you're like always going to be consistent.
Yeah. Right. Good. Yeah.
How many bloobs this week, Gaz? No, don't do the thing out the mouth because you can't pick that up on the record.
Gaz, put your tendrils away. Put your fucking little tendrils away.
It's like four tendrils he's given it out of about 17.
Rude to count another man's tendrils. So.
That is true.
Oh, dear.
Put them away. Put them away. Disgusting. Right. Bloody hell. Anyway, I've written next here, Joel turns up and clocks Nan with a wrench.
Yeah, clock.
Yeah.
After he got his watch fixed as well.
As he, Tommy and Sarah try to escape the chaos. In town, as the military close a border around the city, a plane crashes, knocking them all unconscious. Joel carries a now injured Sarah, but as they escape the infected, a soldier stops them and receives orders to kill them. He shoots and is about to execute them until Tommy saves the day. Sadly, though, Sarah is fatally wounded, leaving Joel clutching his dead daughter in his arms.
Brutal.
So, John, as a non-game player, what did you make of this whole sequence and the way it was shot?
Yeah, I mean, you keep saying non-game player. I played that bit.
Yeah, I know you did, but you know what I mean.
Well, I was going to say, actually, so I was megally impressed with the car journey.
Megally.
Megally.
Felt like a video game.
And they absolutely shot it in that way. Like, you feel like you're the fourth person in the car. The static camera with like the car moving as it does. It was brilliant. There is no comparison, obviously, but when they when Dwayne the Rock Johnson starred in Doom, the movie.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
There's...
you're not going to tell me the sequence at the end.
There's a first-person bit, isn't there, where they're like, right, this is now going to be, and you've got, like, so the gun is steel, and then everything else is, like,
it's
frames per
shambolic.
Second. I think if that Doom film didn't exist, they never would have made The Last of Us, the TV series. How about that?
Imagine that.
I loved it. It was really good. And, I'd imagine, I mean, just the capturing of that chaos, the bit where you've just got people just going mental in the street. I mean, let's not even mention the fact that a plane crashes into the road, but then you've got
effects looked great.
Yeah. You've got Joel, that bit where he's standing there with his daughter, she's obviously twisted or broken her ankle, and he walks into that alleyway. He can't go back, and he's just looking at like 11 zombies,
tendril boys,
eating away, gobbling away. You would just, this is what I'm talking about, where I'm like, I would just kill myself immediately if there was a zombie outbreak, because my voice is going, look, I'm nervous about it now. All that
he's upset.
Zombie talk.
It's an irrational fear.
It is an irrational fear. But I live in Tower Hamlets in East London. So I think it could kick off at any time here, to be honest. It's a bit of a grim place.
Yeah. Be prepared.
The bit where he's running away from that that one fun guy who smashes into the door.
He is fun.
Smashes into all of the plates and stuff and the chairs through the door.
Yeah. Yeah,
terrifying, wasn't it?
You know, just slow down a bit, mate. You'd have a much better success rate if you just chilled out.
He's a raw talent.
Yeah.
You know, if he got some coaching. Yeah. He's just going 110% all the time. His hamstrings must
be... He could be a champion.
Yeah. Well, actually, not with the fungi.
They've been reinforced.
Power.
They've been reinforced with fungi, mate.
Yeah.
Those hamstrings are more solid than ever.
Yeah, that is true.
I think keeping the point of view from, you know, Sarah for a lot of it and having that, you know, that locked off camera in the car like the game, it just looked, it already looked amazing in the game. It looked incredible when they've realised it in the adaptation here. And, like, if you actually look at some of the side-by-side images, it's almost a one-to-one with the game. at times. And it's amazing how well that's translated, actually. Because you could think that was quite like a gamified thing.
Sort of running like a video game character as well. Like, there's a bit where he runs into the wall.
Yeah.
Just, and then takes a little half step back and you have to start sprinting again. But yeah, like that whole sequence I thought was just incredible. And it all culminated in the death of Sarah, which even though I've seen that sequence so many times.
Yeah, why do you keep playing that bit?
Just that bit over and over again. I was in tears, man. I was feeling quite emotional yesterday as well. Don't know why. Just woke up that way. And then...
okay?
No, yeah, I'm all right, yeah. And then I was watching Last of Us. And obviously, like, I think it was... I said this in the hot take. It's just that moment where I sort of realized that this is going to be fucking brilliant. But also, like, Pedro Pascal holding his daughter there, covered in blood, and just... the expressions that he got, I was like, oh my word, this is powerful stuff. And I love it. I mean, it's brutal, but I absolutely loved it, obviously. But heart was broken. and Gaz, you mentioned this, now that we're all parents, it resonated even more.
Yeah. I can't keep watching it. And like, Lenka. I was trying to watch a few kind of feed, yeah.
Let's rewind that bit again.
I was trying to watch a few like instant reaction things. I can't, because they just keep playing that scene over and over to talk about how brilliant it is, and it is brilliant. But I don't need to keep seeing it. I'm done with it now. Thanks. Cheers.
Done with it. All right. Well,
I'll tell you what's weird.
Be done with it too. Okay. Let's not.
Just on that, I think it's important as we're all parents. The way in which we watch media now is different. And I kind of first started getting that with Stranger Things and Hopper and Eleven. You know, I'd lump in my throat, to be honest, on a number of occasions.
See a doctor about that, mate.
But it's the...
tendrils.
Yeah, I know you got, mate.
17 of them.
Yeah, no, we've had a few people in here with that, actually. It's so when I saw that scene yesterday, I was I was emotional, but I mean, I knew it was coming, so it's kind of you kind of prep yourself for it. I'll be totally honest, I was more heartbroken. I'm not going to do any spoilers here, but in The Mandalorian with Mando and Grogu at the end of season 2, that kills me more than this scene does. It's bizarre.
Well, I will say that end scene of Mando season 2 is fucking incredible and still one of the best. I just didn't see it coming, John. We won't talk about that here, but Jesus Christ. Yep. Pedro again, just fucking smashing it.
Pedro plays Jesus Christ.
let's move on. And let's move on 20 years, in fact, because we fast forward. Yeah, very long. We fast forward and we see Boston in the year 2023, completely overtaken by nature. And in the distance, a quarantine zone, a boy on the verge of death collapses just outside and is saved. Hurrah!
Gaz, it's a little girl, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
No, I think it's a boy.
I think it's a boy. I
saw a review saying it was a little girl.
Looked like a boy to me.
Yeah, I thought it looked like a little boy, but...
Non-binary.
Yeah, well, there you
go. Non-binary, John, that's fine. There you go.
Well, Bella Ramsey is gender fluid. So.
I did see that article, actually. Fair play. Fair play, Bella. We support you. Now, they promise him all the food and toys that he wants as they medicate him. And I've written here in my notes, and this is obviously a lie, finally something nice.
That's good, wasn't it? And I left the room, so lovely. I didn't see the next 5 minutes, but I'd imagine that kid had the best time ever.
Big character.
In a toy shop.
Big character.
with candy floss.
Yeah, they got the same toy shop in Home Alone 2. So he's having the best time ever, honestly. He's buzzing that fungi have taken over the world.
And that's the last time we see him.
And
so,
that's it, yeah. I'd imagine he has the best existence ever.
Well, I've actually written here, sorry guys, just seeing this in my notes. We then see a group of survivors burning bodies. So this must be when you're at the room.
What?
A woman sees a body in the truck and she can't do it and asks a man, or as we see Joel, to burn the kid.
Yeah.
We just saw.
What?
Well, hold on, No, she goes, I can't do this because there was a kid that came in earlier, was wearing the same trainers as
him. A bit like that.
So.
Yeah. And I'm babysitting him in 5 minutes, so I've got to go back
at the toy shop.
Yeah, so that reminds me too much of him. So I'm just going to go to the big toy shop where he's definitely safe. Yeah.
Yeah. I've written here, it's like Ramsay says in Game of Thrones, if you think this is going to have a happy ending, .. I also...
Finish your sentence.
That it's obviously, that's it, end of sentence. It is such a contrast to, it's literally like 2 minutes ago in terms of screen time, but we see Joel with Sarah in his arms and then he's just dumping this kid in the fire.
Mm,
yeah.
Now, I thought that was pretty powerful stuff, actually, and sort of tells you everything you need to know. I know you don't like the timestamps, John. But
no, I said I didn't mind him in this.
You need to know.
Didn't mind him in this.
We then see Tess, a new character, obviously, being held hostage by Robert on account of the fact he's scared that if Joel finds out he's stolen his battery, he'll kill him. Luckily for Tess, a huge explosion by the Fireflies, a terrorist group, in quotation marks, frees Tess, but she's then arrested by Fedra.
This little like interrogation scene is so well done at the start because, like, it looks like it's Robert that's in trouble, and is being interrogated.
Yeah,
and
Weasel Man,
and it's like, well, Tess has got a black eye and stuff. It isn't adding up,
and she's tied up.
Yeah, and she's tied up.
She's so powerful, Gareth, isn't she? She's so like in control. You almost get the sense that she's also in control of Joel. You know, like Joel is her muscle. You know what I mean? She's the ringleader.
She does. She explicitly does say that, to be fair.
Yeah. But it's important to know that she can, like, she actually does it. Like, you know what I mean? Because Joel's such an imposing character. You kind of get a real good sense of the chaos in the QZ. John, what do you reckon to the sort of set design and world building in these scenes?
I'm gonna. So if someone shot this and you knew nothing about what video game it was based on, I 100% would be like, this is Half-Life 2. Like, it's spot on.
Yeah, yeah.
The beginning of Half-Life 2.
Mm-hmm.
The way in which the breakdown of like the little alleyways that lead off into little courtyards and stuff, it's exactly like Half-Life 2.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I loved it. It's not, no scene felt needless or overbearing. And again, you're talking about, I don't know what the runtime was, 80 or 90 minutes. It didn't feel long.
Yeah.
You know me, I always look out for these extras where I'm like, that extra was shit, wasn't he? Or like just some little character. I didn't get that at all in this. I thought it was very well done.
I thought for a moment you were going to get it with the police, the guy, or the Fedra officer that Joel's in, like, as his contact. Doesn't he look a bit like a budget Jake Gyllenhaal?
yeah.
But in the end, he was good. He was good.
He was good.
Yeah.
Would you want to live there? Would you just go, oh, I'll just live here? Wouldn't even go out?
I've written in my notes, it's just fucking grim, isn't it?
Mm.
It's just fucking grim.
Yeah.
Like,
a dirty
it's
house.
It's like you survive for 20 fucking years and this is it. And I guess that's kind of the point that the Fireflies are trying to, you know, overthrow this oppressive government or faux government that's sort of taken over the United States. I'm sure that will be explored as the season goes on. Joel is trying to get a car together to go and help his brother Tommy, who he believes is in danger. When he sees Tess and how beat up she is, they form a plan to kill Robert and get their battery back. I'll put here as a little note, in the game, this is different. I think Tommy is kind of estranged from Joel in the game. And the reason they go to Robert is because he stole a cache of their weapons. And I think this version that they tell in the show is way better. Not only does it connect Joel and Tommy more emotionally, but it also, you know, Joel's trying to go out there to save his brother. He's trying to get this car together to save his brother, which I think is just a stronger narrative direction for the character. We see Ellie for the first time posing as Veronica, shackled in a room, being held hostage by the so-called terrorist organization, the Fireflies. She is made to answer lots of questions and tests until Marlene, head of the Fireflies, tells her that she is in fact...
She's bossy, isn't she, Marlene?
She is. She tells her that in fact she has a greater purpose than anyone could have imagined. Now, I know, and I'll open this up to the floor, that we were a little bit skeptical about Bella Ramsey's casting, only a little bit, because we just said that it's a bit of a leap from Liana to Ellie, you know. But we talked about this in the hot take. I think me and Gaz have been won over by her. John, how do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, look, I was never that bothered. She was excellent in Game of Thrones. I think there was some issue with something that she was in after Game of Thrones, where people said she was terrible in it.
Was that Dark Materials?
I don't know.
I haven't
seen
it personally.
But she's been in a couple of things. I think she was nominated for an award for one of them, so she can't be that bad.
She's very good.
Yeah, I thought she was pretty good. I think it's always...
And the award for worst actor goes to...
Not you, so... Yeah.
There you go. Not bad.
What sort of an award ceremony is this that you would call that out? Anyway, so I think it's always difficult as a child actor in a show like this. I think it takes time to build up to them, unless you've got Stranger Things where it's the kids together because they bounce off one another. Whereas it's been fairly dark up until the point that her character is introduced. Well, I think she's going to smash it.
I agree. We'll talk about her and Joel in a second because there's a couple really good scenes coming up. As Joel and Tess head towards Robert's location, they discover the Firefly hideout, in which now there are dozens of dead bodies, including that of Robert's. Job done then, eh? Marlene is wounded and Ellie pounces on Joel with her knife. Marlene stops her, and now, with the Fireflies severely weakened, she tasks Joel and Tess with smuggling Ellie out of the city in exchange for a vehicle to go save Tommy. They accept. So this is the first time we see Joel and Ellie interacting. Ellie essentially trying to stab Joel. He just sort of brushes her aside, which I thought was, you know, shows how like powerful he is and how aware of what's going
it
on he is.
Reminded me of you know, in the Jungle Book where Mowgli first comes across Baloo and tries to fight him.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Baloo just holds him off.
You must be sick, mate. Are you this is fever dreams, mate.
That happens in Jungle Book.
Baloo kicking his knife off him.
That's go sit down in the corner for fuck's sake. Jesus Christ.
That is bizarre.
There's more Jungle Book references coming, don't worry.
King Louis just wounded.
Oh, God.
Look, come on, I haven't got time. I'll tell you what's weird about this scene. I get there needs to be some like warmth, and you know, a little bit of, you know, humour, banter. But the bit where he's like, look, she says, let's have a quick chat when they're talking about potentially taking her as cargo. And she's like, yeah, okay, but not too long, so I'm bleeding out. I was like, it's a bit weird, isn't it? Like, tonally, it's completely out. And then there's the bit where it's like,
line. Well,
like,
I'll... It was off.
Yeah. Yeah, and then there's a bit where, well, no, I'll take her instead. She's like, you've not even got an ear. I'm like, why are you saying that? That looks horrendous, man. She's shot her ear off. There's no time for banter there. You know, I felt slightly uncomfortable at the beginning of this podcast when you were calling Gaz, you know, malnourished. Now, if he was genuinely dying, if he had like a drip on him during this pod, I'd be like, we need to change that. Yeah. He looks quite sad. So tonally, that was bizarre. Mm.
I felt they were, maybe that was a bit of a forced bit of humour in there. And that's fair enough. I get what they're trying to do because, let's face it, it's pretty grim. A lot of the stuff that we've been seeing
but,
so far.
But then there are choices that they make later and you get the feeling that throughout the series that humour is going to come from Joel and Ellie's, like the building of their of relationship.
Course. So the Mowgli relationship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if you've got Bagheera dropping one-liners, it's like, no.
Fuck off, Bagheera. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Jesus.
Bizarre. She is, Marlene is the Bagheera of this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, well done. You've managed to find the negative.
You found a negative, John.
Yeah.
You found a negative. It's a very small one, but you did find it. So there you go, listeners. We're not just praising it. We are being critical as well. Next note I have is Joel and Ellie head back to the flat. And that's it. They have a massive, not massive, but they have a few, it's just those two in the flat, and they have this dialogue, this interaction, which I thought was just brilliant. Just there, it's just a few lines. Ellie's clearly a bit scared, and she's asking, like, how often do you go out raiding? Like, you know, and Joel's trying to do the whole gruff, I don't give a fuck, don't talk to me situation, but he can't do it. He's sort of, you see those little chinks in his armor, like he starts not opening up to her, but he's like trying to calm her down or something. And I thought it was fantastic. I just this moment of quiet before this journey begins with those two, I really enjoyed it. Mm.
Yeah, nice. He just doesn't want to get attached, you know, and the show has told you why. I mean, the guy has to take pills and, you know, multiple shots of whiskey to go to sleep. So, you know, he's gone through it. He's gone through it a bit. Again, I've no idea why he's not throwing himself off a roof or something. But I'm not advocating constantly for suicide on this podcast, by the way. At least like, share and subscribe before you do. What do you make of the radio comms and her going?
Yep.
Oh, there was the song "Wake Me Up Before You Go Go." What do you make of that?
I really liked it.
And what's funny, John, is in the hot take, me and Gaz said what our 80s songs would be that we would use on the radio.
No, I did hear that. I did hear that.
Yeah. What would yours be? Out of interest,
for what though? For like to end the episode
danger.
On, or danger?
Yeah, to end the episode on. Yeah, to end the episode on. So you know, we'll get onto that bit in a minute, but
come back to it. We've got some scenes in between, so we'll come back to it. Have a think.
Okay, we'll come back to you, John. You've got time to think. Okay, listeners now are like, well, I can't wait to hear what
exactly.
he says.
And if you want to just agree with me and say Tears for Fears are the best.
That was a great shout. Ahead. That was a really good shout.
Thanks. It was a good shout.
Shout.
Yeah.
No, let it good. All out. Not that.
Yeah, very good. As night falls, Joel, Ellie and Tess attempt to get out of the city. En route, they are accosted by a soldier, one that Joel provided pills for earlier. As they are getting scanned, Ellie stabs the soldier, and Joel then has a PTSD type flashback of the soldier who shot Sarah. Then he proceeds to beat the soldier to death before it is revealed that Ellie is in fact infected.
Mm.
She then explains that is why she's special cargo, and that bite was 3 weeks ago. Okay, a few things to unpack here. What did we reckon to Joel bludgeoning a man to death with his fists?
I think it was done really well. The like quick little flashback to the moment. You know, it wasn't done necessarily in like a
tacky way. It was done in a
it was done as like arty way. You could see that being what just suddenly flashes through his mind. Like that's what it looked like. So it worked. And someone like Joel, like you would react in that way, wouldn't you? I think it also maybe implies, like, I don't know, it's early days for his relationship with Ellie, but it implies a little bit of protective instinct that he might have over her.
Yep. Yep.
And yeah, I thought it was a well used tool. And brutal. I do feel a bit bad for that soldier. He wasn't the worst guy.
Budget Jake Gyllenhaal. I do think it shows you how broken Joel is, just as a human being, just surviving for surviving's sake.
They all are.
Yeah, I know, but it's just a bit tragic, isn't it? And it's only going to get more tragic, guys, because it's. Like I said, if you think this has a happy ending.
Well, they are the last of us. So,
yeah, very good, John.
Why has no one said that?
Well, fuck it up, they don't. imagine that. It'd be so weird. Although, remember in The Walking Dead? In The Walking Dead, in the graphic novel, when he says, "We are the Walking Dead," that is very powerful. So, maybe there is room for
it. "We are the Walking Dead season 4. What?
Yeah.
In the prison.
And that is why I will become Superman 3.
No. Jesus. Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. The Quest That's for the Family peace. Guy gag. Oh. Yeah.
There you go.
I'll say.
Didn't realize you're such a family guy. Fucked it.
The fact that Ellie's infected and reveals this to Tess and Joel, they obviously can't believe it because, like the guy said
I can't believe that. Honestly.
Have you seen this? Joel, have you seen this? I cannot believe it.
Ah, oh, honestly, I am stunned.
But like the guy in the chat show said, there's no cure for it. There will never be a cure for it, or that's what they thought in the 60s anyway.
Can you believe this, Joel? Because do you remember that chat show in 1968?
Yeah.
Where they said there would never be a cure. Well, she's saying she's been cured.
Yeah.
I can't believe that.
About an hour ago, they were saying it definitely can't be cured, but now we've got the cure, yeah, I think, so that's good.
Oh, 80s song might be coming up for you. Just saying.
The cure, I get it.
So as they head into what is an incredibly... grim looking dystopian Boston with a storm illuminating the collapsed skyscrapers. We hear the radio back at the flat kick into Depeche Mode, signaling danger. Now, how fucking incredible is that last shot?
Yeah, amazing.
Of the city.
Absolutely amazing.
It just looked stunning.
Oh, man.
In a really cool, scary way.
The amount of exploration I would want to do if it wasn't for the bloody
clickers and the shamblers and the bloaters and the stalkers. Yeah.
Apart from them.
Yeah. And the hunters.
Yeah, don't worry about them.
Don't worry about them.
And
for you, Gareth, just being outside for you is disastrous. I mean, you can't even interact with regular humans, mate. You're getting sick so much. So I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Didn't used to be the case. You know, just
you have to stay home.
It's a bit like
you have to
stay home. Like the scene with Sarah. Didn't used to be the case. I was fine before fatherhood. I could watch that stuff and not get choked up.
So here's the thing. The Last of Us game had one of the best multiplayer modes, and Gaz, you know, I played a fuck ton of this.
Yeah, way too much.
Called Factions. I honestly spent thousands of hours on it. Honestly. And the way it works, John, is you go out, you kill other survivors, and then you get supplies. And there's a little bit of text on the side when you get, it's just like a text screen, but it says how many members you've got in your clan. And then on the right hand side, it will tell you some interesting things about what your clan is doing. And sometimes it'll be like, Jennifer ate a rat to survive. That'll be like a tag that it says, you know, before you
rat
jump
girl,
into
rat
a next
girl.
Next match. Yep. Yeah. And sometimes it tells you when people died. And I could just imagine me getting back from one of these, you know, raids, you know, bringing the supplies back for the clan. And then it just says, Gaz didn't make it. And I'll just have to go, I just have to, you know, the situation is, Gaz, I just have to get back out there, mate.
We've already established. I've survived it all.
I know.
I
because
endure.
Of me.
Yeah, he's in the toy store.
Well, that's true. Endure and survive. Yeah. I mean, you just talk about Jungle Book all the time now. I don't know if that is surviving. I don't know.
You got any other films?
The thing about Jungle Book is, it is a metaphor for life. And to be honest, once you've seen Jungle Book, you don't need to see anything else.
There you go. You heard it here first. Right, well, that is our scene-by-scene recap of the episode. But of course, as promised, before we go, it's time to visit Click a Corner.
Oh.
There's a Click a Corner.
This is Dick a Corner.
Welcome to Click a Corner. Welcome to Click a Corner, everyone. This is the segment of the episode where I will be telling you any Easter eggs, delicious Easter eggs from the video game, or anything that I think isn't obvious that we can go through. So let's jump into it. The first one is the t-shirt that Sarah has on in the 2003 era is that of Halicon or Halicon Drops. I don't know how you pronounce
Halicon,
it.
Halicon, isn't it?
Probably Halicon. And there are band posters throughout the first game. And I thought this was really interesting because, it's a Reddit thread that I remember seeing fucking years ago. And this band goes on tour to every single location that Joel and Ellie go on this trip. Just a little bit of story weaving there. Read that fucking years ago. And when I saw the t-shirt, I was like, oh, got to get that in Click a Corner. So, yeah.
We don't filter for quality in Click a Corner. It's just everything.
Oh, there's no... Nah, it's everything, mate. Curtis and the Viper 2, the one that I reckon you... boys would review is an 80s movie. Apparently it's not real, it's fictional, obviously. It heavily features in dialogue for Last of Us Part 2 I'm not saying any spoilers, but it's just in Last of Us Part 2, so that's nice that they were able to sort of get it into here somehow.
Very good.
Sarah's watch, or Joel's watch, is exactly like the game. The line "your watch is broken" later said by Ellie, which I fucking love, by the way, is bang on. Such a good line from her. That, you know, that watch is important, people, so make sure you keep watching it. Keep watching that watch, right? This is tenuous. This one's so tenuous. Joel's wrench, you know, when he smacks Nana around the head?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah? Now, I've been waiting for some sort of game... type thing.
Was the wrench
like
was it Sony PlayStation wrench?
Imagine that. No, I thought it was a nod to the fact that melee weapons in Last of Us, you can only use them like once or twice. You know what I mean? And he drops it on the floor, and I was like, oh, that's a little bit of a video game. Because why wouldn't you keep that tool?
It
that's
disappeared
awesome
when he
weapon.
Dropped it as well. It sort of flashed for a bit and then just disappeared.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
Now this is one that is very interesting for people who have played the game and now have seen the first episode. Tess and Joel's intimate relationship is hinted at in the game, but never really confirmed. Here, I'm pretty sure, boys, are we saying that it's confirmed that they have an intimate relationship, unless they're just mates who like to cuddle, which I'm not saying is not possible.
I mean, yeah. It's not explicit. It isn't explicit. It's heavily implied.
It's not over the top, but it's heavily implied here. I would say there's enough evidence on show to back up everyone that said that Tess and Joel do have a romantic relationship.
Mm. Yeah, I think they do.
I like that. I like the fact that they've got a, you know, relationship. I always thought that when I played the game. So it'd be interesting to see maybe a bit more of that in the coming
episodes.
Would
it have annoyed you if it was explicit? Not in that way. Not like full frontal and stuff, but I mean...
That's where the budget goes.
Did you say full frontal or full fungal? Because I don't really... Yeah. You see what I did there? Disgusting. Yeah. Tendril. Jesus,
you love
Christ.
You love your tendril porn.
Yeah.
Tendril.
Oh, yeah, my God. God, this show's got crass.
Either that or
apologies,
yowie.
Listeners.
Word. Yeah, would it have annoyed you if it was like, yeah, they're just in a relationship?
Yeah, I think the way they did it was actually quite like nuanced and interesting, and you know, not over, not like in your face, which I quite like. You know, it's like they're keeping something back, which I quite like.
Oh, put it away, mate.
I wonder if we will even see any more of it, because it might just be one of those things where it's like, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter.
No, I don't think it does matter, but it's just a nice little nod. This is one that I. Obviously playing the game so much, the amount of times you see shots of backpacks, backpacks play a fucking huge role in the game, and I am waiting for some on-the-fly crafting. It has to happen next episode or soon, because let's face it, that is The Last of Us. They definitely have to get a bit of that in there. Escaping the QZ is literally extremely similar to the game. The searchlights, it feels like a stealth section, which I'm kind of hoping there won't be loads of stealth sections, but I kind of like the fact that the escape from the QZ was like that. And I've written in my notes, the sort of gameplay that John hates.
Yes.
So
I think you hate that. You hate stealth as well. So I am confused as to why you keep playing this game, because there is a lot of stealth.
No, I like stealth in like Metal Gear Solid and Last of Us. I hate stealth in games where it's just pointless.
Whereas, I reckon he plays like
this,
a hacked
this has
version.
A narrative.
Where he's like RoboCop.
This has a narrative reason for stealth. All right.
I think I did think it was a bit weird though. Like when they saw little budget Jake having pissed.
It was a little weird. Yeah, I know what you're gonna
say. Like,
yeah.
And then they like decided just to still try and walk past him. Like just go back a little, like just wait.
That was very video game.
It was really
like,
weird.
They slightly mistimed it. He's turning around. Hey, you there.
But if you go back in the shadows, he'll go, must have been imagining
hey,
things.
What was that? Huh? I think I saw something over there. Huh? My imagination must be playing tricks on me.
There's like an exclamation mark on top of his head. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, dear. And the final one for Clicker Corner is the actress that plays Marlene is the same actress from the game.
Oh, nice. That's good.
There you go.
So that's it for our initial thoughts, the deep dive on the series premiere of The Last of Us. If people could be so kind as to subscribe, share, and spread the word of this podcast, that would be incredible. If people want to go even further and join our Patreon, then they can go to patreon.com/fancritical, where you can get access to bonus content and, of course, help us out financially. John, you like it when people give us monies, don't you?
That's all right. I mean, I won't say no.
But he never says no to anything.
Well,
so that's the way he is.
Yeah. Okay.
And Gaz needs it. He needs fucking rations. Send in the money so we can get Gaz some supplies.
I'll just spend it on new Jungle Book related paraphernalia.
Fuck off.
End this pod with Bare Necessities just playing us out.
Oh my God. Right. Anyway, thank you to Patient Zero, Gareth, whose fever dreams have taken him. And if he's not in the next podcast, you know what's happened, listeners. All right. So that's that.
Can you imagine how annoyed listeners will be if we end without me saying any song from the 80s?
Yeah. Oh, good point, John. Yeah. Good point.
So anyway, so see you later.
Take it away.
Do you know what?
What's
I thought
song?
About something from Human League, but I would probably end on something like, just because it's going into the city, West End Girls from the Pet Shop Boys.
Very good choice. Very good choice. And on that note, thank you, John. And thank you for your 80s wisdom.
No problem. I was born in it, moulded by it.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Now, as we always say, let's go on another supply run, find more beautiful supplies and rations, help little Gareth. And in the meantime, endure and survive.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.